This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Dustin Hoffman and Anna Hastert.
Welcome back to another Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman.
And I'm Anna Hastert.
Well, we got through another week relatively unscathed, I would say, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's been somewhat more of a mild week this week. There's still been news, but just not coming in as quickly, mainly because of the Easter holiday that we have going on this weekend.
Well, you know, in the way last week ended, you know, with having to all of a sudden find out the vice president's coming, so you race across the state to cover that, and you have a lot of things going on with the flood. And like you said, it was kind of nice to have almost an easy week, but that's, like we said, though, it's not to say that nothing's been happening. Anna, I mean, we've been kind of watching the trade front.
Right. There's a couple things that are happening here on the trade front this past week. One of them is developments with China. So China has indicated that they could, key emphasis here on the word could, lift the ban on U.S. poultry products as part of trade negotiations. The United States is also trying to work with them to lift its ban on U.S. pork that was fed with the feed additive ractopamine. So a couple developments going on there, things that they're working on. It seems like things are heading in the right direction, and hopefully we will be able to see that trade deal finalized in a couple of weeks here. You know, a couple weeks ago we heard about a 4 to 6 week timeline, so hopefully we can see it in that 4 week time frame that they provided instead of 6 weeks. You know, it would be better to get this sooner rather than later, because there are going to be implications even after a trade deal is agreed upon. We're going to have some of those lingering tariffs still in place. So we would like to see that get done so we can move forward and hopefully repair from the damages done in this situation. But there's also been a couple things happening on the U.S.-Japan trade front. And Dustin, you've been covering that week. So what's going on in that negotiation process?
You know, the whole thing of China's been a lot of hurry up and wait for the last several months. You know, you think you got something, then it changes. But Japan, we knew was coming. Hopefully, you know, it was about the end of last year we started talking about it, where we were trying to negotiate a bilateral trade deal with them. We didn't get involved in the TPP or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or now they call it the CPTPP. I can't keep up with it all. But that went into effect, and that's been giving our competitors some great market access, especially on the meat side of things, where you have Australia. The European Union has their own agreement with Japan, not to discount what the TPP brings for those Pacific Rim countries, but the United States has been working on the groundwork for some bilateral trade with Japan, and it sounds like those negotiations finally got off the ground this week. The early indications had been a couple months ago from Greg Dowd, who works with the trade representatives, that we're trying to get something similar to TPP so we could see our tariffs be reduced as well, so we could compete. I mean, right now we're paying a 38% tariff on meat going into Japan, where Australia and New Zealand, they're only paying 26%, which is going to drop all the way down to 9% over the coming years of the agreement. You know, the longer it's in place, the better the deals get. However, if we can get on those playing fields as well, that's going to make our products just as attractive as what the Australians are getting. So the benefits of doing a bilateral trade agreement with Japan on our own is the fact that we negotiate one-on-one with Japan. Whereas in the TPP, if we wanted something changed, we'd have to get approval from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, all these Pacific Rim countries. Where now, if we want to change something that maybe in a year or so that, hey, let's try to tweak this a little bit. Boom, we're with Japan. We're not having to negotiate with everybody else. So again, that's some good news there. You know, some wait and see on that front as well.
Right. And we mentioned some things that are going on with us as a nation and those overseas as well. But there were also some things happening on a statewide level. And one of those this week was the 91st annual Iowa State FFA Leadership Conference, which is their annual convention that they host up in Ames. And Dustin, you actually went and covered that event. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you saw, what you heard at this event?
Well, what I saw was blue and gold as far as the eye could see. What I heard was a lot of corduroy rubbing together. But, you know, no, it's just, it's great to see that the young people in agriculture that are really the future of where agriculture is going to go in the next couple decades. you know, they're the ones that are coming up, the more tech-savvy kids, that even, you know, even more so than the younger, just a few 5, 10 years ago kids, that just they've got more tools at their disposal, and those tools are being integrated more into agriculture, so they're on the front line of this. And what really gets me is the fact that, you know, it used to be FFA got thought of as sows, cows, and plows, and it's not that anymore. There are so much, there's so much more available to these kids to help support the agriculture industry, and so it's great to see them there. I believe Ken Root was available and on hand for the very first conference that was held in Ames, but I'll have to check with him, Alan, whether or not that's true. Now, Anna, you were a member of FFA, where I was only a green hand for 1 year, and then I got out of the organization to pursue what I thought was going to be a different career path in agriculture. But you were in the competition. Now, you even went to state.
Correct. So I was in the Harlan FFA chapter for 4 years. I didn't get started early in eighth grade like some of my other classmates had, but still did the four-year term there in high school. And you're right, Dustin, I made it to the state competition a couple different times. I believe I went for conduct of meetings my freshman year, parliamentary procedure my sophomore year. Then my junior year, I went for ag broadcasting, actually, and I had placed fourth in the state. So that was kind of a big deal because that was a gold honor. I got to stand up on stage and be recognized for my accomplishments. But that wasn't a feat that I was able to tackle on my own. I had a lot of help to get there, to get to the state competition in ag broadcasting. Fun fact, I actually was the last person to get chosen at the sub-district level to advance in the ag broadcasting competition. So I've come a long way since then, but got some help from some local farm broadcasters before I headed off to the district competition. Tom Robinson, who is a farm broadcaster at KSOM, where I had interned once upon a time, helped me out tremendously, was a great mentor during that time. And then I had also gone back to him a couple other times before I headed to the state convention. So I owe a lot of my success to those mentors that I had. I thought that I would be good at ag broadcasting because I had the gift to gab. Well, it takes a little bit more than a gift to gab, I learned along the way. So, yeah. And the funny thing is, that's what ultimately led to my career here as a farm broadcaster. So kind of neat to see how FFA played a role in my future and where I'm at currently. And I still highly support that organization. I mean, like I said, it played a huge role in where I am here today. And I actually got to judge the state ag broadcasting competition last year. So that was really fun for me to listen to some other kids that were in the contest because, you know, I didn't get to listen to the other kids that I competed against back in the day. So really interesting to hear some of those kids give different broadcasts and then also give them some encouraging, hey, you got what it takes to be a farm broadcaster. So if you're interested, please look into it because I think you could be successful in this industry. So just encouraging the next generation, hopefully get a couple more farm broadcasters out of the FFA organization.
Yeah, definitely a great organization. Like I said, I was only a member for 1 year, but I've seen the benefit as I've been a farm broadcaster and doing ag journalism. I've seen that. And, you know, if we're able to help out these kids in any way, like you said, judging and giving that critique or being there as that foundation for these kids to learn from and lean on, you know, it's always a great feeling to help those kids out because they're going to be bringing a new perspective to it, but they still need that base groundwork that has been going on for years. And it's always an honor to be able to help those kids and help them grow and develop in that situation.
Right. And I'm always encouraged by those students that do reach out to people who are in the professional world and say, hey, I'm doing this to not only compete well, but to better myself as well. I had a girl that reached out this past year for some tips on ag broadcasting who had already made it to the state level. But, you know, she just wanted to better herself as a potential ag broadcaster, as a student, as an FFA member. And that's always encouraging to see. They might not even be going for the gold, but they're still putting forth what it takes to be their best. And I just think that's great. I encourage all FFA students who are looking to compete in a contest next year to reach out to some of those professionals. They're more than happy to help you. And it's always fun for me to lend some advice their way because it's like, hey, they recognize the work that I did and what I was able to accomplish when I was in FFA and what I've been able to achieve now in my adult career, or my professional career, rather. So it's always fun for us as professionals to help them out, too, because, you know, people are dependent on you and they think that you're doing a good job where you're at now. So that's always encouraging, too, just kind of a little boost of confidence there.
Yeah, we are now the wise owl in the Tootsie Pop commercial.
I'm not that old, so.
No, not at all. We'll be talking with the Nottoway Valley FFA group that I talked with at the convention. We'll be coming up with them a little bit later on as we kind of took that trip down memory lane with Anna Hastert and her days in FFA. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Farm Credit Services of America is pleased to report record cashback dividends of more than $230 million. For many of our customer owners, the share of earnings that benefits their operations and helps support their local communities is needed this year more than ever. We're proud to have shared more than $1.7 billion since 2004. Discover the power of ownership at fcsamerica.com. Agriculture works here.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Tom Vilsack, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture for the Obama administration and governor of Iowa before that, has stated his vision for the years ahead. He emphasizes diversity in agriculture as a strength for the future. His tone is encouraging, but bringing diversity to production agriculture may require government incentives that reach far beyond the current social and economic base of that region. Production agriculture is literally white as snow. Farmers of color have been gone for at least two generations. People of European ancestry have thrived on the plains since the mid-1800s, and their productivity has only been matched by that of similar white settlers who moved from Europe to South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. Steve King, our Northwest Iowa congressman, has taken a lot of heat for declaring that white people have contributed more to the advancement of human civilization than any other subgroup of people. Although he was politically insensitive to say that, in agriculture, he was right. That doesn't mean diversity is not coming. Agribusiness is already diversifying for one simple reason. There are not enough farm-raised kids to supply the needs of corporate America. Rural youth have been one of the most attractive subgroups in modern times, as the work ethic taught by farm life, combined with their parents' desire for each generation to be educated and excel, has resulted in most rural youth seeking careers off the farm. It is often pointed out that our most valuable farm export has been our children. But the well is running dry. Pioneer Seed says only 10% of its new hires come from a farm background. Intelligence has no color, so human resources professionals are casting their nets more broadly. 4-H and FFA are popularizing agricultural careers in urban schools, so diversity is moving into agribusiness. However, I don't see many of the first generation of those agribusiness professionals transitioning to farming as their primary occupation. There is one minority that is moving up in farming operations, white women. The likelihood of a woman taking over a farming operation from her parents is much higher than a generation ago. Society and technology have combined to pave the way for women to operate literally any unit of agricultural production. I know women who run greenhouses, forage farms, dairy operations, and swine units. In some cases, the spouse has an outside job, and the wife or partner is the sole decision maker on the farm. Women have long been a part of farming, but only recently have they gained equality in management. But I don't think this is the diversity Secretary Vilsack has been describing. The challenge in production agriculture is for ethnic groups to move into farming from other backgrounds. The business model hardly works for those who are doing it right now. There are some small-scale exceptions, like specialty plots that surround major cities. These farmers are often immigrants who have skill in a garden-sized fruit and vegetable operation. They sell directly at farmers' markets. The investment is reasonably small. The work is hard, but the transition is considered to be positive by first-generation Americans who speak limited English and may have an extended family in the same house, with some members working off-farm and others contributing with their household farm labor. But will the future administrations of our government accept the diversity in agriculture stopping at the farm gate? Will government incentivize newcomers or disincentivize those who now farm? I don't think we'll see a substantial number of U.S.-born African Americans return to the land. Their social history is too painful. However, an apologist government could award land to Native Americans and African Americans. Old treaties could be honored by future governments. We have to wonder whether both subgroups could be appeased by ceding either government or private land to them. Future trends are hard to sense without knowing the agenda of government. It seems unlikely that this country will see value in decentralizing its population. Rural people are likely to be more self-sufficient and less friendly to government control. You don't have to be white to have a redneck mindset. Farming, at any scale, is subject to political forces that tend to keep it marginally profitable except for brief periods brought on by weather or world demand. God save us from people who mean well. Change our color in rural America, but don't change the creed of the production sector.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. This past week, the Iowa FFA Leadership Conference was held in Ames. It was a chance for FFA students to showcase their skills in front of the whole state. It's a time to receive the honors for their hard work as well. I caught up with some of the students of the Nottoway Valley FFA chapter from Greenfield, Iowa. Advisor Blake Anderson told us about their chapter. I'm with Nottoway Valley FFA Advisor Blake Anderson. Thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us today.
Thank you very much. A wonderful opportunity to showcase our chapter and the wonderful FFA conference.
Tell us a little bit about your organization, where you guys are coming from.
Yep, we are based out of Greenfield, Iowa, and our FFA chapter is right around 65 members in our school. We have 200 high schoolers, so pretty decent-sized chapter. And this year we have 20 kids here at State Convention competing in several different events, so one of our largest years ever.
I'll say 20 kids up here, that's a pretty big feather in your cap.
Oh, definitely. And especially in the last 6 years, we've had a lot of growth. We used to only have 20 kids in our chapter total, so we've grown a lot. And it's really because the organization inspires kids to learn about their food and get involved in the leadership aspect.
You know, and as you, I'm sure, were an FFA member yourself growing up. Have you seen a big change even just from the time you were into what it is now?
Oh, definitely. My home chapter is in Corning, Iowa, Southwest Valley Schools, and it was very production-based, and we had a lot of farm kids involved in that. And so we, in my chapter, we have more kids that are female, and we have more kids that are from the town. So we're moving more urban, which is wonderful. The kids really are just concerned about where the food and its leadership opportunities.
And, you know, also it's that opportunity that just because you're in agriculture doesn't mean you're the one putting the seed in the ground. There are so many ways you can support agriculture in different ways.
Most definitely. family. A lot of my kids that have graduated work in agribusiness somewhere, even though they never thought they'd be connected to ag. So wonderful opportunity.
And of course, even if they don't pursue a career in agriculture, the leadership skills they're learning in an FFA is going to serve them well no matter what goals they pursue in life.
Oh, most definitely. I have kids that call me that are now in law school and some other things that, hey, Mr. A, that speech that you made us do in our junior year, we are using those same skills that you taught us. So it's great to share that information back with our students.
And so as we look at the future of agriculture, especially in a time like it is right now, things are kind of uncertain. I mean, how do you feel the future of agriculture is looking as we stand on here among all this, the sea of blue corduroy?
It is looking wonderful. We have a lot of bright individuals here today and all across the state of Iowa that are learning about agriculture, learning about leadership, and really wanting to make a difference in their future. They want to have that impact, and FFA just helps them have that impact on a level at the state level, national level, as a high schooler, moving right into their college and into their future adult life.
All right, so I'm going to give you a chance to brag on your chapter a little bit, talk about what they do throughout the year and some of the things that they've accomplished.
Yeah, so one of our biggest thing is Ag in the Classroom. Over 90% of our students go to our elementary programs, and we work in preschool, first grade, kindergarten, and third and fourth graders. So wonderful opportunity there. And then we also do several different contests throughout the year, going to national convention, all of the conventions as well. And we really promote ourselves to the community. That's one thing we brag ourselves on, is make sure that we're out there. And we get lots of phone calls requesting for help because they know the kids are going to be there, dependable, and they're ready to give back to that community because the community supports our chapter so much.
And you look at the future, you know, these smaller communities that are all rural-based economies. I mean, seeing that strength in the numbers, the kids that are wanting to be involved some way, shape, or form to support the industry going forward, that makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Oh, most definitely. And a lot of the kids want to move back to Greenfield or some other small rural towns to make sure that we have those vibrant rural communities for the future.
So what are you saying to students that maybe aren't involved in FFA to try to get them involved and say, hey, think about it at least?
Well, I always start off first. If you're going to eat, you know, where does that food come from? And when you are eating your meal, thank that farmer that you would have gotten that food from. And then also I just take them and I show them, okay, here's a job interview. We do it in class. Here, you can do that as a career development. Why don't you go ahead and join FFA? Oh, you like doing soils judging in class. Let's go ahead and get you involved. So pulling those classroom connections from real world and tying it into the FFA curriculum as well.
Of course, you cannot spotlight any chapter in the FFA without talking to those students who are making the group successful throughout the year. I had the chance to visit with Nottoway Valley FFA students Haley Deemer, Mallory Coons, Addie Lamb, Julia Eshelman, and Joshua Baudler. They shared some of the experiences and really embodied what the FFA organization has become. The work these kids are doing is extensive, and it's paying dividends. Haley Deemer tells us they received a gold rating in their first trip to state.
This is our first year bringing Experience the Action to state, and we got a gold. We got thrown into it 3 days before competition at districts, and so we spent like day and night trying to put this thing together, and it was a presentation that we had to give to middle schoolers.
We've highlighted the fact that careers FFA prepares students for now isn't just being in the field. Addie Lamb oversees the chapter's website. This is allowing her to get hands-on in web design.
I participated in the chapter website this year. I updated the chapter website last year. It was the first year they brought it, so I just had to update it. Yeah, it's just not about farming. There's more aspects to FFA. I presented my website yesterday, and it got a gold rating, and I got third overall. For districts, I spent a lot of time updating it and getting all the information from my advisor, but then I just had to practice my script.
Not only are these students honing their own skills, they're also learning how to evaluate the skills of others. Julia Eshelman is a member of the nominating committee who recommends these students who are running for state office.
I was on the nominating committee, so I got to be on a committee with 12 or 11 other people, and we got to ballot the state officers. We spent 3 days in Ankeny, and we were interviewing the candidates, and then we were balloting them. And then yesterday morning, we went up on stage, and they read the nominating committee report, and we got to see all the people, like, be excited about them getting balloted for state. And then we got to listen to their speeches yesterday to the delegates from our district, and we got to ask them questions. They have to be ready to, you know, put everything they know about FFA and their ag knowledge out on the line and just be prepared to answer questions that they don't get asked in day-to-day situations, and just be ready to, you know, tell people who they really are and what skills they have.
Mallory Coons is also part of the process, and she was a voting delegate for electing state officers.
I was a delegate for our chapter, and I sat in, listened to all the officers' speeches when they're coming in to be an officer, and then we voted on them for next year.
The students are also keeping up to date on issues which we talk about every day. Josh Bodler joined discussions on ag issues. His group focused on the GMO debate.
I was involved with ag issues. We worked really hard, and we did it all on our own. We didn't have any help from the advisor, just a few tips here and there. We talked about GMOs and how they affect our food, and it took a lot of researching because our script had to be 15 minutes long.
The whole experience is making these kids better prepared for their futures. Haley Deemer gave me what I think may be the best synopsis of the benefits of being an FFA that I've ever heard in my years as an ag broadcaster.
Definitely an amazing opportunity, and you learn a lot of new leadership skills. When I first came in, there's no way I'd be able to be up talking to you right now like I am, for sure.
These FFA students are giving a lot of farmers confidence that the future of agriculture is in good hands for the years to come. Thanks for tuning in to Weekend Ag Matters this week. We hope you had a great time, and we look forward to being with you again next week. For Anna Hastert and Ken Root, I'm Dustin Hoffman. Thanks for listening.